Welcome back to Coast AM. So I'm covering the movie Vaxxed tonight. It's the documentary about the alleged cover-up by the CDC when a 2004 study that was done by the CDC found a link between the MMR vaccine and autism, and that how that might have led to an increase of autism in our country. So there's three issues that I'm covering here. One is the MMR vaccine and its connection to autism. Now, that's verified several times in the film by parents who have had vaccine-injured children. Now, that's undeniable. There are parents who have had children that have had immediate reactions to the vaccines, and that's documented. And there's a vaccine court, a vaccine injury court that substantiates that and tries to take care of those families. That happens. There are children who have received vaccines that have not re had these autistic symptoms arise. There are children who have not been vaccinated who are autistic. So there are various ways of measuring this and looking at it. The second part that I'm talking about here is about the whistleblower that we just talked with Dr. Brian Hooker and how he was contacted by someone inside the CDC who still works there, talking about some of the missing data from the study that they did. And the third thing I'm talking about here is the censorship of this particular film in these film festivals. And this is the three things that we're talking about here. So we're covering a lot in this short 2 hour period of time, but it's not all going to get covered here. I highly encourage you to go see this movie, Vaxxed, to check it out for yourself. We're going to be speaking with Dr. Andy Wakefield right after this about the vaccine itself, the separate vaccines, what would happen if we didn't vaccinate, what would happen if we separated them all out. Those types of conversations, we're definitely going to talk about that. But I do encourage you to find out where the movie is going to be playing near you. They're playing at independent film festivals, I mean film centers. The Lemley Santa Monica is playing it. You can look it up at vaxxedthemovie.com. You can find out where the movie is playing near you. And just because it's banned from film festivals doesn't mean that the movie's not still playing, and it's playing to sold out audiences because it's creating quite the buzz. So we will be back with Dr. Andy Wakefield when I come back. This is Lisa Garr. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. This is Lisa Garr, and my next guest is Dr. Andrew Wakefield. He is an academic gastroenterologist, and he is a medical researcher. He has particularly found an interest in inflammatory bowel disease, and he's published over 140 original scientific papers, reviews, and book chapters on the subject. And he is joining me to talk about the vaccines themselves. Now, Dr. Wakefield, you basically mentioned that the issue that you supported was separating the vaccines to have a measles vaccine, a mumps vaccine, and a rubella vaccine, given at yearly intervals, not all at once with the three vaccines in one. Is that correct?
That's correct, Lisa. Just to let you know, I'm at Heathrow Airport in London, so there may be some strange announcements going on in the
Okay.
background. So please don't be put off by that.
Great.
Yes, my position most certainly wasn't anti-vaccine, but I had major concerns about when they put these three live viruses in combination together and injected them into children. And this is a way in which nature had never, ever seen these viruses before in the whole of human evolution. And it was to be expected, therefore, that there may be some unintended consequences of that. And this came to pass. It came to pass when they first put them together in the very first experiments. The viruses interfered with one another. And what that did was to change the immune response, the level of protectiveness to various viruses. So it was perceived as a nuisance, an irritation, which meant that they had to increase, for example, the dose of the mumps virus to get the same immune response. But there appears to have been no concern whatsoever for the implications for vaccine safety. They were just irritated that it meant they had to fiddle with the various viruses. So there were warning signs, red flags, right from the get-go. And then in Japan, they used an MMR where the mumps component caused meningitis. And it had to be withdrawn. It was withdrawn in Japan. It was withdrawn in the UK.
Canada.
And elsewhere around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And what is important about that is when the mumps component that caused the meningitis was used as a single vaccine, then there were no prospective reports of meningitis at all. 5 million doses were given and no obvious meningitis problem. It was only when they were put together in combination that the meningitis suddenly appeared. So one and one and one do not equal three. They equal something completely different. And all of the safety studies around that were ignored, never done. And there was a professor in Japan who said just that. He said, why we never explored the basis for this dramatic increase in meningitis when in the combination vaccine is a mystery. But they didn't do it because they didn't want to do it. They had no interest in safety. And now I'm afraid I believe that children are paying the consequence for that.
So as we've learned a little bit before the getting on the line with you, as we have explored the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine cover-up story, and we've spoken with Dr. Hooker about what Dr. Thompson explained to him and where to find the information. My question for you is about the vaccines themselves. Explain to me, how sick do people get from measles and from mumps and from rubella? And if we did not have those three vaccines in existence, would we have an epidemic of those viruses? How long do those viruses last in the human body? Can they kill you?
Right. There are two ways of looking at this. And the first is from an historical perspective and ask what has happened to the to measles infection, for example, or any of these infections over time, over the last two centuries in the developed countries. And what you see repeated everywhere is a dramatic decrease in the mortality from these infections and the morbidity, that is, the sickness that accrues with these infections. So, for example, in the UK, in the 1920s, mortality from measles was high at, say, 120 per 100,000 infections. But that had diminished by 95% or more before the vaccines were ever introduced. Now, if we had not vaccinated, what would have happened to that downward trend? We have no idea because we intervened.
Right.
It may well have continued downward. So it is not possible to simply say it was due to vaccines. None of that decline in morbidity, in death rate or mortality, in mortality can be ascribed to the vaccines. They can't, simply not. And it is a deception by the authorities to present just the end of that graph without the beginning bit where there's this dramatic decline. So that's the first thing, is that there was a changing pattern of outcome from these infections with time. We intervened. How did we change that? We won't know in developed countries. Number two is to look at how these infections were perceived historically and how they're perceived now. And if you go back into what is called the British National Formulary, which is like the physician's desk reference, ER, or this kind of thing, or what was written by the authorities themselves at around the time these vaccines were introduced, then what you see is that they were described as mild childhood diseases. However, that said, you could make a case, a strong case, for protection against measles because there is the risk of permanent injury and death. It's very rare, much, much rarer than is than we're told in the literature. But nonetheless, there was a risk of long-term disease and death. So it's, again, not an anti-vaccine argument. It's trying to give context to what we are now told. Now you take mumps vaccine. This was purely a commercial initiative. The CDC themselves and the British Department of Health said there is no need for a mumps vaccine.
Wow.
And it was first put forward by the companies. They said this is a mild disease in children. There is little to no cost. Why would we want a mumps vaccine?
And it's treatable.
And it was a commercial initiative only to get a monopoly on measles, mumps, rubella that forced that through development. And it's interesting, a very, very senior member of the CDC said himself, his own words, in the end, when other, all states seemed to be using it because they had been prevailed upon to use it by representatives of Merck, the conclusion was, oh, to hell with it. We might as well use a mumps vaccine. That was it, his own words, oh, to hell with it. So that is the science behind the use of mandatory mumps vaccination in this country.
How much?
Then went on to, sorry, I just...
Go ahead.
I'll say one more thing and be quiet. Mm-hmm. But what they did then is to get a statistician from the CDC to come up with some numbers on just how serious mumps was. And the person in interview, who was Donald Henderson from the CDC, said those numbers were a pure air creation. His words, a pure air creation. So I'm afraid that what the public are being told now and what was the truth are two very, very different things.
Interesting. Now, what is the profitability of the MMR vaccine yearly? It was stated in the movie. I don't remember.
It's a very, very good question. The precise amount that derives from these vaccines. I think probably a more important question is where it's going in the future. The future of the pharmaceutical industry, by their own admission, is in vaccines. And it is because drugs that are currently on the market, normal pharmaceutical drugs, are going off patent. There are very few new drugs in the pipeline. And it's not becoming a profit, or it's not remaining a profitable area in which to progress your company. But vaccines are very different. And there are 200 to 300 new vaccines in development at the moment, many of them will find their way onto the mandatory vaccine schedules for children and adults in America.
Right, that don't need as rigorous of testing as...
Well, absolutely. Not only do they not go through the rigorous testing that pharmaceutical drugs do, but the drug companies have no liability for injury caused by their vaccines once they are on the recommended immunization schedule. So you could make a car with no brakes and pay no fine for or ever face being sued for people who died as a consequence of you selling that car. That's the kind of market that we are looking at. So as a business model, why wouldn't you get involved?
There's
everything to make and nothing to lose.
Well, there are now a recommended schedule of 69 vaccinations that are on a CDC schedule that's given to the pediatricians to administer to every child. And now there's the whole issue, which we haven't even tapped into yet, is the requirement and how this is just robbing our freedom with children that are required now to have these vaccines in order to go to school, at least public schools or private schools. And that's a whole different issue. And there's still ways around that. So that's, but it's not easy at this point. Now, this schedule of vaccines that's recommended by the CDC for children is only recommended based on the fact that these viruses are growing. Is there any data or information on the fact that measles, mumps, rubella, anything else is on the rise in America? Let's just take America, for example.
Well, it's a very interesting question. And the answer is, let's take two diseases. Let's take mumps and chickenpox.
Mm-hmm.
Mumps is now occurring in populations where we didn't see it before. It's occurring in adults and in college students. And you see, the mean age of getting mumps when mumps was a prevalent disease was 7 years of age. So the vast majority of children had had mumps and recovered from it and had lifelong immunity by the time they were teenagers. Why is that important? Because mumps as a child is trivial. Mumps as a teenager, particularly a post-pubertal boy, is not trivial and can cause testicular inflammation and sometimes cause sterility. So it is not a benign disease. Now, that is a consequence of mumps vaccination. And it's a consequence of mumps vaccination because the mumps vaccine does not work. So So we're now seeing mumps outbreaks in people who have had 2, 3, 4 doses of this vaccine. And the recommendation of the authorities for this vaccine that doesn't work is just give another dose. So here's another tremendous irony, and that is the profitability of mumps vaccine is massive precisely because it does not work. What other product in the world could you imagine that being the case for? So what mumps has done has turned a mild, mumps vaccine has done is turn a mild childhood disease into a severe childhood disease. And what your listeners may not know is that Merck were challenged by the FDA on the failure of their vaccine. On the product insert, it says it protects 96% of children. For every 100 children who get it, 96% are protected. When in fact, the truth was it was way, way, way lower than that. And they said, the FDA said, if you can't prove that it's as effective as you say, then you lose your license. And so Merck had two choices. They could either improve the vaccine or they could fake the data. And they chose, apparently, to fake the data, for which they are now in federal court in Pennsylvania facing charges of fraudulently manipulating the protectiveness of their mumps vaccine.
Well,
and so MMR has problems across the board. And that's just one example.
There's, I mean, if we were to eliminate all vaccines, do you think that there would be a rise of all of these different types of diseases if there were to be an entire country that chose not to vaccinate whatsoever?
Yes, I do. And I believe, I mean, that is the case. These diseases would come back. How severe they would be, well, that's another question. And what I'm not advocating is that we do that.
Mm-hmm.
This is about vaccine safety. It is not an anti-vaccine argument. It is saying there is a problem. We are seeing a dramatic rise in chronic immune-mediated disorders in children, disorders such as autism at the severe end of the developmental spectrum, right through to asthma, eczema, hay fever, insulin-dependent diabetes,
mm-hmm.
Crohn's disease,
anxiety, depression,
all of that. Unprecedented mm-hmm. levels mm-hmm. of these diseases.
Mm-hmm.
And people are saying, parents are saying, this was triggered in my child by a vaccine. I wasn't anti-vaccine. I took my child to be vaccinated on time.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the consequence that my child and my family have had to pay. Now, there is a safer way of doing this. And my concern and my life's work to this point has been focused on finding safer ways to do it.
Is there a test that can that is administered that can show if a child has certain detoxification pathways that are clearable, that are open when receiving, before receiving certain vaccines?
Yes, I believe there are. Without going into details, it is now emerging that what we're likely dealing with in these children is a toxic overload.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's not MMR or mercury preservatives or aluminum, or it's a combination of all of these things. I think it is the sheer load of these toxins
mm-hmm.
that the child is being insulted with. And we have a limit beyond which our detoxification systems cannot go. And that limit varies from child to child, not just because of their genetic makeup, because of how well they are at the time or how well nourished they are.
And how young they are.
Antibiotics, for example. How old, exactly.
All of
these factors play in.
Right.
And so one size does not fit all.
All right. Well, we're going to have to take another quick break here. Hang on with me. I know you're at Heathrow Airport, but we really appreciate your information. So hang on for me. We'll be right back. This is Lisa Garr. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. This is Lisa Garr. And I am talking about the movie Vaxxed. We're talking more so about, well, several issues here. We're talking about the connection between the MMR vaccine and autism. Dr. Andy Wakefield was just on with us saying that he definitely did not say do not vaccinate. He said there's got to be a safer way of doing vaccines, that the toxic load that comes in from the schedule of vaccines before during childhood is heavy, is a very heavy load, and there are many reactions that certain children experience. Not all, And there are also children that do have, that are on the autistic spectrum that have never been vaccinated. So there's definitely those that have been affected. There's those that have not. And then there's those have not been vaccinated that have autism as well. So we've presented that argument. What Dr. Andy Wakefield has said is there's got to be a safer way of doing vaccines, possible testing to determine whether or not a child can clear and detoxify the load of toxins in the vaccine is one way. The second thing we've talked about is a whistleblower at the CDC and how there was a specific study that was skewed, that there was data that was thrown out in order to adjust the overall outcome of a particular study. We've learned that. And we've learned about the censorship here that the CDC has attempted to exercise in terms of getting this information out there. We've learned these several things at this point. So now we're going to take your calls and dive deeper into this subject. I wish we had the rest of the night, but give us a call. And I've got the producer of the film, Dale Bigtree, on with us. I've got Brian Hooker, who is the bioengineer and the scientist who received the phone call from the whistleblower at the CDC. And I've got Andy Wakefield on with us as well. So we will be right back to take your calls. This is Lisa Garr. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. This is Lisa Garr. And my guests on the line with me right now are Dale Bigtree, who is the producer of the film Vaxxed. We've got Brian Hooker, who's the bioengineer and scientist, and also Andy Wakefield is on the phone with us, who's the academic gastroenterologist. So let's go to phones here. We've got first-time caller Julie in Kansas calling. Hi, Julie. Thanks for calling Coast to Coast.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me what's going on.
Well, bear with me. I heard inoculation when I was I'm very, 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 very tired, very sleepy. It's very late for me. But my daughter, she was born in 1990, and she had her first inoculation, and I kept her by my bed, and next thing I know is that she's gurgling on her formula, and she had a fever, and I took, you know, she's in the hospital, and they said we're going to do some tests, and we found out that she had a bad batch of pertussis, and she's going to have some petite malls. And my basic thing is just if you can tell me anything about that year, you know, inoculation of pertussis and her having petite malls. Now, she does have some after effects. She's 26 now, but at the time I couldn't move, you know, go shopping, go around the corner real fast. She would spike fives, so I'd always have to take her to the hospital. You know, I would call them spike fives. So she would have these high temperatures and throw up. So as much information as I can get on that and the aftermath of maybe having children, et cetera. Go ahead.
Well, thank you very much for this. There's a lot of callers asking the same question. Where can the public get data? Who would be the best person to answer that? Maybe Brian? Brian, who's been researching this most of his life. Brian, could you answer Julie's question about where to get data about the seizures and the vaccines?
Well, it's a very, very good question, and the reaction that I think it was your daughter that you said, is not uncommon whatsoever. That was back when the pertussis portion of the DPT vaccine was what's called the whole cell pertussis, and that particular vaccine was phased out. It is no longer available because of that particular reaction. And in fact, the what's called the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, which was started by a congressional act in 1986, was built around the reactions due to the whole cell pertussis vaccine in the DPT. There are some very, very good resources to get information. One of the best resources is the National Vaccine Information Center, the NVIC. If you go to nvic.org, then you can get, there's a whole treasure trove of information. And the founder of the National Vaccine Information Center, her name is Barbara Lowe Fisher, has written extensively, specifically on the DPT vaccine, the vaccine that caused your daughter to have that reaction.
Okay, thank you very much for your time.
That answers a lot.
Welcome.
That's great. That's great. Thank you so much. All right, so let's go to our wildcard line five, Will in Madison, Wisconsin. Will, do you have a question about
the shortage? Thank you for taking my call. Yesterday after church, a number of us elder citizens had a meeting, and we were surprised how many of the children and the grandchildren had autism. Okay, I worked for a drug company overseas for a while, and I was told to fudge my data. I wouldn't do it, and I was let go. That's the way it is in the drug industry. They want you to fake the data just so they can make more and more money, honestly said.
Wow.
And I'm happy with my life the way I live it.
Wow. Wow. Thank you so much for your phone call, Will. I really appreciate that. Fascinating. I don't know if Andy chooses to comment or if Brian chooses to comment on that. Both of your lines are open. Or Dell.
I think... can you hear me?
Yes.
It's Andy here. You know, I mean, this gentleman says it all, really. It's in a nutshell. Encapsulates the fact that we've got a dramatic increase in autism, an epidemic that we're told will reach one in two children born in 2032. That's an unacceptable.
Okay, yeah, that's very interesting.
Any problem. And secondly, the drug companies are what they are. They are putting profit before anything else, and they do not care about safety.
No, I have a question for you, Andy, about the insert in the MMR vaccine that says this vaccine may cause seizures, fevers, banging of the head. It doesn't exactly say that second part, but the last part. But it does warn there that there are all of these potential side effects. Does that alleviate the drug company from any responsibility? I don't understand that part of it.
Yes, I don't think it's put there as a way, as a device to say, to acknowledge that MMR vaccine causes autism. I think they would deny that, but it is put there, I think, as a commercial strategy to, or a legal strategy to minimize the risk of any future litigation. If, for example, they are found to have been negligent, not just that their vaccine has caused harm, but in causing harm, they have knowing it causes harm, they have concealed data. So it would be, at that point, I think they would be liable, and this may go some way, I think, mitigating that legal risk.
Fascinating. Okay, I was just curious about that. All right, let's go back to our callers. We've got our first-time caller, James, in Oregon. James, thanks for listening to Coast to Coast. What is your question? Oops. Bye-bye, James. All right, let's go to the accidentally hang up. East of the Rockies, Michael in Virginia Beach. Michael, hi, do you have a question?
Yes. First of all, I want to say that you and your guests certainly deserve both the Nobel Peace Prize for tonight's show and an Emmy Award. to get quickly to it, I defended your guest, Mr. Dr. Wakefield, on a local public radio station, the Norfolk, Virginia Beach, Hampton Roads area, and I was told shortly afterwards that I am banned from ever speaking on a show that I was on very frequently, and I've been on talk shows across this country for 35 years and never banned. Now, here's the situation. The person that banned me was a producer connected with one of the largest investment banks in America. I could tell you his name just by telling you the name of that bank, and leaving off the first two initials. But here's my question. Here's my question.
Yes.
What kind of an industry is this autism treatment industry going to be? And how are the investment banks connected to it?
Wow, that's a great question. My God. Let's go to Dell Bigtree. Dell, do you have any knowledge on that correlation?
Well, we spent so much time just really dealing with what the whistleblower was saying, the numbers have increased. But one thing's for sure, whether people are going to make money, and certainly the pharmaceutical industry stands to make money because they put most of these children on psychotropic drugs and all different ways of handling them as they get older. But the sheer numbers are beyond belief. We are looking at an issue that is going to bankrupt this nation. If you think about it, we were at 1 in 10,000 back in 1970, 80s. We're now at 1 in 68. The CDC admits to 1 in 68 children being diagnosed. A poll last year had it at 1 in 45. If you talk to some specialists looking at it, they believe we may be more at 1 in 25 right now, children with autism. But any one of those numbers is scary when you look at it this way. This year alone, roughly 100,000 children born will ultimately be diagnosed with autism. We're filling cities with autistic children that will ultimately be autistic adults. So I have a 7-year-old and a 2-year-old child. When they're adults, they're going to be surrounded by millions of autistic people, the cost of which CDC says each child with autism costs about $5 million to raise. So,
wow, and if their parents have passed away, then it becomes
all of our burden. Mm-hmm. And many of these parents aren't going to be able, can't afford that themselves anyway. How many people have $5 million to raise a child? This is bigger than institutions we have. What are we going to do? And when you realize that this is a man-made problem, it's, as Andy said, and it's not just this vaccine. I think we need to really be testing everything right now. We should be looking at pesticides in our food, GMOs, our water, the air we're breathing, you know, along with vaccines. We're injecting chemicals straight in the bloodstream of children. But the sheer numbers, the amount of money involved in this and what it's going to cost this nation is astronomical. And it really could end the strength and power of the United States.
Well, I do also want to say that, you know, I have several friends with children on the spectrum, and I don't love the word burden. I want to say that there's definitely a lot of love that those parents have for those children. And there are some amazing doctors that are working with them and having some incredible success. So there is hope. I want that to be known. There's the DANZ Association that, you know, the doctors, I don't know what it stands for, but there's some great people that I know that have, you know, working with microbiome, the gut-brain relationship. There is definitely hope. So I want people to definitely know that who have kids in the situation. So, all right, let's go back to the phones here. We've got in our wildcard line, Brandon in Texas, how are you?
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. Do you have a question about the show today?
Yes, I was a resident, family medicine resident, and I had asked one of my attendings if I could do research on the non-vaccinated children that had autism, and tried to compare those numbers with those that had received vaccination, and they were very dismissive of that, and I didn't know if there were actual studies about that. Oh. It seems to me that it would be pretty clear cut if there was a dramatic increase in those that are vaccinated.
Oh, there's a huge study that's shown in the movie. I actually could probably have Andy Wakefield mention that, the study on that, if you could briefly touch on that, Andy.
Yeah, sure. Vax, unvax study, the one they don't want to do. I'm just flying in from Stuttgart, from a meeting in Stuttgart, and there was a presentation there where a researcher had actually taken a
German database of health outcomes from the German equivalent of the CDC. And they had looked at vaccinated versus unvaccinated. And they had found that health outcomes, chronic adverse health outcomes, were significantly more common in the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated across the board, whatever adverse health outcome they looked at in. And the data were then presented, and the CDC equivalent in Germany had said, oh, no, you've analyzed these wrong, and they did exactly what was done by the CDC in America. They threw out all of the children who are children of immigrant populations on the basis of no justification whatsoever, and reduced the statistical significance to the point that there was an effect, but it was not significant. And they were so in doing exactly, I mean, this is a pervasive pattern of behavior. It's very, very interesting amongst regulatory agencies, is that they are prepared to fiddle the data, fiddle the books, adjust the statistics until they get the result they want, and it is totally dishonest. And I think that these people really do need to be held to account, because what we're looking at in the CDC whistleblower story backs is the worst medical fraud in the history of the world. And people need to realize that is why people do not want the American public to watch this film. That is why it's being censored, because they are terrified.
Wow. Fascinating. Well, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it, Brandon. And also, I didn't thank Michael earlier. Thank you so much for your call as well. We have time for another quick call. And I do want to mention that there was some part in the film where the president of the CDC wound up becoming also the president at Merck as well. And that's also highlighted in the film. Very interesting statistic there. All right, let's go to Marianne, west of the Rockies. Marianne in Washington. Quick comment do you have, Marianne?
Actually, it's a question with a comment, and I'll say it as quickly as I can. I wondered if your guests know the name of a woman who wrote a book, and she might have gotten her information from Wakefield, and it's about this subject. And she was in prison before she had her trial, where she was accused of the same things that she was exposing. She was a whistleblower.
Do you know her name?
No. I'm asking if they do, because I think she got their info from them, and it might be good for the public to know about her book, too.
Okay, great. Is anybody familiar with...
I believe, this is Brian, I believe that you're referring to the book Plague, and that was written about the scientist Dr. Judy Mikovits, who found retroviral contamination in vaccines.
Oh, gosh. Well, this is such a hot topic, and I thank you so much, and thank you to all my callers, and thank you to my guests. Thank you, Andy Wakefield. Thank you, Brian Hooker, and thank you, Del Bigtree. The movie, again, is called Vaxxed, V-A-X-X-E-D. You can look up where it is airing or where it is showing in your area. Hopefully, it'll come to you. VaxxedTheMovie.com, and you can find out about its world premiere. And we just appreciate the conversation today. Thank you for all that you've contributed and that we've discovered. This is obviously a hot topic. And I appreciate you for listening and for your calls and for contributing to the show. Without your comments and your input here, this show wouldn't happen. So thank you so much to all the listeners of Coast to Coast, and also Lisa Lyon, Gina Salvati, George Norrie, Tommy Danheiser, and Nathan here in studio with me. Thank you so much, and until next time, I invite you to stay aware.